The question of where to draw the line between science and pseudoscience goes back centuries. One striking example was the early controversy over blood transfusions. In the 17th century, the first transfusions provoked outrage among the leading doctors in France and led to a scandalous murder trial. Science historian Holly Tucker tells the story in her book, Blood Work.
Blood transfusion was entirely counterintuitive when it was first proposed, and that's what makes it such an interesting story, because for millennia, blood was let. And so the very idea of putting blood into the human body was nearly unthinkable until William Harvey in the 1620s discovered blood circulation.
And that is also counterintuitive to those people, because blood was considered at that time the location of the spirit?
No, it was counterintuitive primarily because blood was considered to be the product of the digestive system and did not circulate. So you ate food, it was concocted, was the word that was used, in the digestive system, moved to the liver, distilled in the liver, and then moved immediately up to the heart, where it was burned off. The heart was something like a chimney or a furnace. And William Harvey, like many men of his time, deeply questioned, to what degree can we be sure that the ancients had it right?
And how did he reach the conclusion that it was circulating?
It's interesting. First, he started with the valves and the veins. If blood does not circulate, if it just moves up to the heart, why do we have all these valves? And he discovered, actually, as he watched, the blood of serpents and the heart starting to beat slowly as the serpent slipped towards death, to see the heart pumping and the veins and the arteries inflating and not. And he wondered, perhaps something is happening in this hydraulic system. So he then did a dissection of an adult human heart and measured 2 ounces of blood in one chamber of the heart, multiplied that by the number of heartbeats in a given period, and then found that the body would have to make an obscene amount of blood in a short period of time. I think one of the numbers he throws out is 41 pounds in something like an hour or something. And he says there's no way the human body could produce that much blood and burn off that much blood. Mm-hmm. So he puts those together over a long period of questioning and comes up with the theory of circulation.
You know, it's funny listening to you, because you, as you recite this discovery that he made over a long period of time, it sounds so reasonable. And that brings us to the subject of transfusion. The English began transfusion experimentation first, and the French slowly began to try it as well?
Actually, the French engaged in it begrudgingly, because the English and the French were locked in, I guess we would call it in modern terms, a space race. This is when nationalistic agendas are being associated with scientific discovery, so that England and France were not only locked in a war on battlefields, they were also locked in a war for knowledge. So when the English started performing transfusion experiments in animals, word went to France, and King Louis XIV instructed his Royal Society of Sciences to do private, actually secretive, experiments to see if the English actually were onto something. They hoped they weren't, because they didn't like circulation, or whether they were liars. And they didn't have much success with those trials.
But that brings us to Monsieur Denis, who took this one step further. Now, where was his experience come from?
So at the same time that the French were having no success privately, secretively in the Academy of Sciences, Jean-Baptiste Denis is in Paris. He's a brand new medical student from Montpellier, not the heart of medical knowledge. Paris has a stranglehold of that power and that knowledge. Denis was trained in Montpellier. He's also a man of lower birth, so he's not part of the elite. And he comes to Paris wanting to make a name for himself. And he hears about the English trials. He senses that there's going to be pushback in Paris, and that's what we do to get people's attention, is to do things that are unacceptable.
The horror of the scientific community must have been enormous.
He wasn't making a lot of friends. We can say that. He first did a transfusion on a young boy who was feverish. He paid the mother to do that, and the experiment was successful in the extent that the boy did not die.
He transfused the boy with animal blood from a young lamb.
That's exactly right. And the second experiment was with a butcher, a healthy butcher, likely the butcher who had provided the lamb for the transfusion of the young boy. And that also went well.
One of the interesting things about this is the opportunity we need to take to step back and look at the general reaction again at this point, because you're talking about the infusion of animal blood into human beings. And that changes the dynamics of this. This is the middle 1600s that we're talking about,
1667.
And at that time, though we think of that as the beginning of the modern age in many ways, still there was an awful lot of superstition. And that superstition especially dealt with the tales that people were hearing of animal-human hybrids in other parts of the world. And they must have been terrified in some ways.
Well, and to back that up a little bit, we're at that period where the distinction between science and superstition is not yet determined. In fact, the distinction between alchemy and chemistry, astrology and astronomy is not determined. But there's increased emphasis in the works of, for example, the philosopher René Descartes, the man I think, therefore I am. He was adamant that minds and bodies were entirely distinct, so that animal and human bodies were identical in the sense that they functioned as machines, and that the soul, which is the defining aspect of humanity for Descartes, and also the ability to reason and to speak, is that was a disembodied attribute. So that if you were to use animal blood, if you were Cartesian, it would be little more than putting oil in your car.
It would be a mechanical fluid. That's all.
Absolutely.
But to the general public, there must have been some concern, because if you look at Greek mythology, there are all of these beasts with the body of a horse and the torso of a man. There are men with boar's heads. That's a through line in the way people describe horrible creatures and a source of fear.
Monsters occupied the early mind from antiquity well in through New World travels, and that interest in hybrid species becomes amplified in this time period, because you have travelers going out into the farthest remote areas of the planet coming back with stories of communities of dog-headed men, of sea monsters. But what's different here, is it possible that science could be engineering those creatures that are at once fascinating and so frightening? And that's where blood transfusion became so abhorred and feared.
We come back again to Jean-Baptiste Denis, who eventually transfused a man who didn't survive.
So Denis' third patient, a mentally ill man, Denis plucks him off the street, infuses him with calf's blood. The first experiment works. The second experiment works in the sense that the man survived. And the third experiment, he's dead. Denis then is accused of murder, which is very interesting. It's one of the first cases of medical malpractice. He ends up doing actually a proactive runaround. He suspects that he's going to be accused of murder. So he goes actually to the criminal courts and says, something's not right here. You need to investigate it. It turns out, after a very long and dramatic court case, the courts determined that Denis was not guilty of murder, but the patient had indeed been killed by arsenic, and that murder was actually precipitated by several physicians, whom later Denis calls enemies of the experiment. It's a fascinating case.
It is.
I cannot imagine modern medicine right now at this point without the benefits of blood transfusion. But it was so frightening as to be banned for over 150 years following this court case.
You know, in addition to the question of scientific ethics, which is paramount perhaps in this case, it also raises the question of what exactly is science, because people are both wildly enthusiastic and frightened by science. What's the nature of science? Is that the question that's at the root of all of this?
I think the question is actually even deeper. What does it mean to be human? How intact are those boundaries of humanness? And how does science at once help us understand what it means to be human and also challenge those boundaries when I take a look at something like blood transfusion and the concerns about science being able, real concerns in the 17th century about science being able to construct these hybrid beasts through transfusion, I think about something like human embryonic stem cell research. At first, they would seem to have nothing in common. But what is the debate around that? It boils down to something quite basic. When does a clump of cells take on human moral status, right? Where does humanness begin? When does humanness end? And when we're looking at early cultural fears in the 17th century of hybrid beast, we're looking at deep questions about who we are and what it means to be human.
Holly Tucker is a historian of medicine at Vanderbilt University. Her book is called Bloodwork, A Tale of Medicine and Murder in the Scientific Revolution.